Welcome to Hustling Faith. This podcast is dedicated to helping women who want to analyze, apply, and amplify their God-given gifts. We accomplish this by discussing topics such as business, self-improvement, health and beauty, and my random thoughts about life from a Christian perspective. I'm your host, Latasha Johnson. Are you ready to break free from the worker bee mentality? Life is way too short to learn everything the hard way. Why not take a shortcut and use Starring You services to help start your side hustle? Starring You is proud to offer the following services: podcast management, course creation, and voiceover work. Starring You services will help you acquire the skills you need to break free from the hive. In today's episode, I'm speaking with Dee Brown. Dee Brown is a multifaceted entrepreneur, award-winning producer, director, writer, author, talk show host, and philanthropist. He is the founder and CEO of the P3 Group, the nation's largest African-American-owned public-private partnership real estate development firm. He also serves as the founder and chairman of the nonprofit Brown Foundation Community Development Corporation. Welcome to the show, Dee.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm so glad that you came on to the show. Why don't you tell the audience about yourself?
Sure. I'll try to give you the elevator pitch. So I'm Dee Brown. I'm the president and CEO of the P3 Group. So that's my primary business. We are real estate developers that develop projects for local, state, and federal government agencies under what we call public-private partnerships. And so most of our projects, we offer a complete design, build, finance solution where we kind of shift the burden from the government to figure out how to execute projects. And we do those for them, and normally at a much quicker pace and less convoluted than a typical government project. In addition to that, I'm a talk show host for PBS. I shoot in Central Illinois, public broadcasting station. And I have two talk shows there, one that focus on people that have come from ordinary means to achieve great success, called Self-Made with Dee Brown, CEO, as well as HBCU, which focuses on individuals who came from historically Black colleges and universities through either alumni or leadership, where they have gone on to achieve great success. And we like to highlight those stories. I'm a film producer, so I have a production studio called Self-Made Entertainment, where we produce films and movies, primarily focusing on documentaries in the film production side. And we also have a Self-Made Tequila product that we have on the market, which we ship to 43 states around the country. It's a premium tequila that's produced in Tequila, Mexico. And we have a streaming platform, Self-Made TV, which has thousands of free movies and documentaries on them.
Sir, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, that...
I forgot something, but that's...
Oh my goodness. Like that, the list that you just rattled off is incredibly impressive. I mean, you're an entrepreneur, you're a producer, you're a talk show host, you're a philanthropist, an author. I mean, you wear so many different hats, right?
Right.
How do you juggle all of them, and which ones do you enjoy the most?
You know, interestingly enough, I enjoy all of them pretty much equally. But I would say that the way that I'm able to juggle it is by having a team of good people around me who kind of help lighten the load for me. So there are a lot of things that we accomplish and achieve as an enterprise that, you know, other people lead the charge on just under my leadership. I would say from a fulfilling perspective, I think the work that we do philanthropically through the Brown Foundation, as well as through the P3 Group, I think those are really more impactful to me than just the simple projects and that we deliver day in, day out. Even though a lot of the projects that we do all kind of centered around the same thing. So when we develop real estate projects, by us being primarily developers for government agencies, we kind of tend to lean towards projects that transform communities. So whether it's K-12 educational facilities, whether it's healthcare facilities, or, you know, student housing, those projects tend to have impacts on the communities and tend to be projects that give people opportunity for access to healthcare or access to educational opportunities. On the Brown Foundation side, we kind of go hand in hand with our other for-profit ventures, and we look at how we can go and create endowments, which we have endowments at a number of HBCUs around the country, as well as scholarships and other financial supports to athletics and bands at HBCUs and minority-serving institutions. And so whether it's our projects that provide access to affordable housing, or whether we are providing access to healthy and wholesome food through our Attack on Hunger program, we're constantly looking at ways that we can do projects that not only impact the bottom line of the company, but also impact the communities in which we serve.
Wow, that's amazing. I'm just sitting up here. I'm just so impressed. There's only 24 hours in the day, and you, sir, have made the most out of every last one of those hours.
I try to use 16 of them at least.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, when do you sleep? But I was just like, well, he's got to sleep. He's not a robot, right?
So. I need about 5 hours, 5 solid hours. I'm good to go.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I get that question quite a bit myself. I'm nowhere near your level, but a lot of people are always like commenting, you have a lot of energy. And I kind of feel the same way. If I get at least 5, I can somewhat function. Right. I know that's not healthy, not trying to advocate that, because I'm big on health. But, you know, if I could at least get at least 5, I'll be able to function.
Well, you know, and I would say this, and I've been doing it for quite a while, and I do very extensive executive physicals every year. Just left the Mayo Clinic in November for my annual physical there. And great bill of health. So I think it's really a combination. It's not just the sleep. I think it's also what you put in your body has a greater impact than an extra hour of sleep. And I think sometimes people will confuse the fact that, you know, you're not really paying attention to what you eat and drink every day and how that could impact your body. And, you know, and so we're actually focused on that as on the film production side. We're doing some environmental justice documentaries, which are going to really highlight just that, because I think many people, especially in communities of color, don't really realize some of the things that are going on as related to, you know, you hear about social justice, but there's an environmental justice component as well that deals with everything from the air we breathe to the contaminated drinking waters that exist in many communities of color.
That's so true. It's interesting that you mentioned that. I remember back in college, many moons ago, but I remember back in college taking a GIS course, and it was just amazing how many landfills are strategically in Black and brown communities.
Right, right.
Like, you never see them in you know, the kind of fancier areas, if you will.
That's right.
It's just in those areas.
And it's not just landfills. I mean, there are chemical plants. You know, there's a stretch in New Orleans, an 85-mile stretch from West Baton Rouge to just south of New Orleans called Cancer Alley, where there's a significantly high level of cancer within the residents. And along that 85-mile stretch are nothing but hundreds of chemical plants that located along the river there. So, and people have, you can go to some communities there where every single person in the community has had cancer, or everyone knows someone on their street with cancer. And or asthma and all other types of side effects from living in that area with all those chemicals and toxins being put into the atmosphere. And so, you know, we still got communities that have unsafe drinking water. You know, the 2024, we got right now, there are multiple locations today that I'm aware of that don't have drinking water. In Jackson, Mississippi, they got water pressure issues today. Of course, we heard about the national story some months ago. But then, Central State, they just shut their campus down because they don't have drinking water there. That's an HBCU, and we're talking about not just water you can't drink, but water you can't bathe in. And so, you know, tackling these type of issues go kind of beyond, far and beyond just, you know, doing for-profit business.
Sure. I could talk about this all day, because that actually just, it drives me crazy. I love documentaries, so I'm the biggest nerd. So that was another thing. I was like, oh my goodness, I get to speak with someone who creates documentaries. So I was all excited about that. So,
yeah.
Well, let me segue away from this to a slightly lighter topic. But what gave you the confidence to take that leap into entrepreneurship?
You know, it's pretty interesting that, and I tell people this, that I've never had a job where I had to punch the time clock. So I've always been an entrepreneur. Now, growing up, in the rural Mississippi Delta, came from a single mother household. My grandfather had a third grade education. He helped raise me most of my life. My grandmother died when I was in the sixth grade, and she had only an elementary education as well. And she kept was a housekeeper for a prominent physician in the community. And so I realized early on that I didn't really have anything to fall back on. So I watched my mom work 16 hours a day, 12 hours a day. And I said to myself as a kid that I wanted to have that type of work ethic, but I wanted to figure out how to do that and really create success and wealth for myself. And I used to always dream about owning a business, starting a business, running a business, being successful, doing many other things that I do now. And actually, some of the things I dreamed about as a kid, I've exceeded those because I wasn't aware. So you only can dream to the boundaries of what you, your knowledge base is. So, you know, now I'm afforded the opportunity to do things that I never even dreamed about or never even knew about. But it all came from me just wanting to take that risk. So I left college my senior year with one semester left and went into real estate sales. And the guy that owned the company said, look, we know we're going to let you be a salesperson here, but based on the interview, we don't think you're going to be very successful. And so I began a career in real estate sales at that Century 21 franchise. 4 years later, I bought the company and he came to work for me. And I went back to college, finished my undergrad, finished my master's, not really for the sake of getting a job, but for the sake of completing something that I started. And also to set a precedent for my children as well. And so ever since, you know, I kind of went out on my own, that's all I've known is to try to continue to figure out how to grow and risk and failure is just part of the equation.
Okay, I got to piggyback.
Okay.
You left with one semester left in college.
Yes.
I heard that correctly.
That one semester left. When I went back to finish my degree, I went back in the fall of one semester and was finished in December, graduated in December.
What gave you the, I just couldn't imagine. I went ahead and got my degree just to be like one semester shy. What gave you that got to do this? Because a lot of people would not have done that.
Right. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I was 19 years old. I was going to meetings about real estate transactions with my uncle, and he knew nothing about real estate. And he had 600 acres of land. He told me, look, you can do whatever you want to do with the land, except sell it to make money to help support you while you're trying to figure this out. And so I sold the lumber, all the trees for lumber, and made, I don't remember the exact amount, but it was, you know, tens of thousands of dollars I made off that transaction. I was like 19 years old. I used some of the money to go to real estate school. And when I went to real estate school, I just became fascinated. And I did that over the summer. And I was supposed to be going back to Memphis State in the fall. And so when I finished the class, I was just so fascinated that the guy that taught the class to me is the same guy that owned the Century 21 franchise. And so he was the only person in real estate that I knew. So when I got my degree, I went straight to him and said, hey, can I sell real estate at your company? And he said, well, come in, let me talk to you. He interviewed me and I went through the interview process. And looking back on it, when he told me that he didn't think I was going to be successful, he had every reason to believe that because I answered all the questions wrong. Not just because I didn't know the answers, but some of the things he asked me were just over my head at that time. And I later realized that, hey, I didn't answer this question right. You know, I know hundreds of people here. You know, I said I knew 20. You know, so just little details like that I got wrong, but it panned out that, again, I became the number one salesperson in that office in a very, very short period of time. And he was very good at real estate training and instructing. So when I bought his company, we hired him back to be the corporate trainer for the company.
I just love that whole full circle moment there. Like, that is just absolutely amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. I don't know how you came through with that. Actually, I want to piggyback off of that one more time because I'm thinking about all the folks that are in college today or in the position to think about going to school. In your opinion, if they were faced with that same kind of opportunity, do you think that folks today should really think about having that piece of paper, which is the college background, or should they go and pursue that experience, that opportunity? Because sometimes, I feel like you can always go back to school, right? But you can't always get that one opportunity. So what would be your advice? I'm just kind of curious because that's so interesting to me.
Right. And this is, interestingly enough, this is a topic that I put a lot of thought into. I've actually drafted articles that I have not published yet on this topic. I believe that, and I always go back to talk about, you know, communities of color, because I know the disadvantages that we face. But when you look at technical jobs that are available, you know, college isn't for everyone. And so I think that if you have a particular skill set that you're strong in, and there's a high demand for that skill, and there are high wages being paid for that skill, that by all means, you should take the technical route. And I know traditionally, coming from where we came from in terms of our mothers and our grandparents, and mm-hmm. understanding that during their time frame, going to college was the most viable option to lift yourself out of poverty. And now, with the way that there's such high paying jobs that only require technical skills and certificates, yeah. that I believe that you would be leaving money on the table, because oftentimes people go to school and college is really not for them. They don't really have a field that they're passionate in. And so they go to school, they get straddled with student loan debt, only to come out and find themselves working on jobs that pay low wages. And they find themselves in a situation where they have student loan debt for 20 years or more. And it ends up being a significant burden on them. So I think the technical route is a very viable option, and no one should be ashamed of that. They should take that option if it's available to them. Again, I went back to school so that if I saw something in one of my children or multiple kids of mine that said, hey, you should do something, you should go to college. I didn't want to be like the person that says you do this and I didn't do it myself. So I kind of, went full circle there. And of course, I still encourage my kids to go to college, but my kids, come to work for me. And so I'm doing it, for a different purpose and looking at a different outcome than, say, someone that's sending the kid to go to college and don't really know where they're going to land when they finish.
I love your answer so much, because it's kind of similar to how my parents viewed me going to college as well. They're like, you better know what you want to do before you go in there, because how are you going to make that money back? So yeah, I do appreciate that answer so much.
Yes, I really do. Investment is an investment.
Yes, it definitely is. And you want to make sure that you can recoup that back. So, oh my goodness. So I want to dig a little bit more into your entrepreneur hat, if you will. So you're the founder and CEO. I don't want to get this wrong, this whole little list here. The founder and CEO of the P3 Group, which is the nation's largest African-American owned public-private partnership real estate development firm. So this is an amazing accomplishment, right? So I want to learn more about your journey.
Sure. So started in real estate sales, eventually decided that I was going to be an investor, started buying and reselling single family homes. Then kind of stuck my toe off into commercial real estate development, did some commercial real estate acquisitions, some multifamily acquisitions. During around 2008-ish or so, when the markets crashed, I turned to government contracting, and I began to do highway, bridge, and street construction for government agencies, because there was a lot of money put into infrastructure projects to help bring the economy out of the recession. And so I saw that as an opportunity to kind of get into that space and be able to build a business that can take advantage of the current market conditions. And while I was doing those projects for the government agencies, and I had great success at doing it, I kind of stumbled into this little area of public-private partnerships. And I was doing those projects with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. But at that time, they were not calling them public-private partnerships or P3s. They were just calling them leases, that we need someone to acquire X and lease it to us for a period of time. And in the beginning, it was a heavy equipment where they had the forces to conduct construction projects in-house, but they did not have the equipment. So I began to acquire equipment and provided to a variety of federal agencies, including Fish and Wildlife, Department of Interior, the Army Corps of Engineers. And ultimately, I landed a project in Goose Creek, South Carolina, with the U.S. Nuclear Naval Command Training Center. I was the first African-American to actually have a prime contract. meaning that there was no other, I was not answering to another contract, and my contract was directly between my firm and the U.S. Navy. And we got that contract helping the U.S. Navy change out 60,000 pound sea anchors on nuclear submarines. And we had to have these 500,000 pound cranes that we strapped to barges. And then we had to use tugboats to take the barges and the crane into the nuclear facility, had them swept for bums by the Navy divers. And then once we were in there in that secure location, we had to remain in there and remove those sea anchors, the old sea anchors, and install new sea anchors for the Navy. And we received a very good rating on that project upon the conclusion. And shortly after that, this kind of light bulb went off on me, because I started to hear about public-private partnerships. And I started to realize that that's what I had been doing for the last few years. I was doing public-private partnerships. And so I took my knowledge of real estate and construction and what I had learned about public-private partnerships, and I put that together to form a company called the P3 Group. And I decided that what I wanted to do was to specialize in being able to deliver projects for local, state, and federal governments that otherwise may not get done. And I decided that the way I could have the most impact corporately was to find these tertiary markets that everyone were not kind of flocking to try to assist with these projects. And I felt like I could build my own little niche by going there and offering services that they did not have. For example, if you go to, say, the city of Dallas, the city of Dallas may have 200 full-time attorneys on staff there. You go to a smaller municipality, let's call it a West Memphis, Arkansas, they have one attorney. And that attorney may not be sophisticated in structuring bond deals and things of that nature. So we put together a team that consisted of architects, contractors, attorneys, the whole nine yards. And so we go in and we actually help them structure the transaction. We help them design the project. And we also oversee the construction of the project. And we deliver the project to them typically in the form of a lease or lease purchase or some other type of transaction that we mutually agree upon. Sometimes it's a partnership between us and the agency on the project. And so it varies from project to project, but ultimately we're there helping agencies that don't have the technical skills and resources to execute the projects by themselves.
That is absolutely amazing. So you're like, you're full service.
Yes.
You're full service, but how did you... So much of business is based on kind of who you know and not necessarily what you know. But in this instance, did you have like the connections, the government connections, or the knowledge, if you will, to pull off that project? That sounds kind of way outside of real estate a little bit, right? Like,
what I found is that initially, a lot of my relationship didn't begin because of who I know. I got a lot of my experience based on the fact that I had done a good job on other projects, and they were looking for a minority to have a contract. And I just kind of fit the mold to be able to do that and be successful. Okay. Ultimately, once I launched the P3 Group, we're all about relationships. And so what we realized is over our many years, we've been able to forge a significant amount of relationships. And I have business development professionals who work for me that they have significant relationships. And so we use those relationships to identify opportunities where there is a need for our service. And we try to work those relationships to actually get awarded those opportunities to help deliver those projects. And it's been a rewarding endeavor for us, not just on the side of making money, but it's been rewarding because we've seen firsthand the impacts that some of our projects have made in communities and how some of our projects have been used as a catalyst for growth and transformation within those communities.
It's absolutely amazing. I had to ask that part because I'm just like, how do you go from A to B? Like, how does that?
Right. It's one of those things where for whatever reason, I've been blessed with this gift to when I get an opportunity, I'm already looking down the road to say, okay, now how am I going to leverage this opportunity into the next opportunity? And if so, what would that opportunity look like? And what steps I need to take to put myself in position when I get to the end of the road to be ready to seize that opportunity? And so I've had just been blessed with the ability of foresight to an awareness to be able to put myself in the right positions.
Oh my goodness. Well, speaking about foresight and opportunities, you have the self-made brand, correct? So why don't you tell us a little bit more about the self-made brand? Because that I've done some research on my own and I am so impressed with it. And I just know the audience will be too.
Right. So the brand was actually birthed when I was purchasing my second yacht. It was a 100-foot super yacht. And I was trying to come up with a name. And I went through all types of scenarios in my mind, but I wanted it to be something that was really special and something that really I felt like that symbolized my life and my journey. And I kind of landed on self-made. And I did that, came up with that name because I kind of looked back over my life and I realized that, you know, I had no advantages, no particular advantages in life. You know, like I said earlier, single parent household, mom, you know, worked long hours. And so I felt like, you know, what I did was something that people could look at and see and realize that they can do the same thing regardless of their own situation. They could become really a self-made person because in this country, you know, it's not perfect by a long shot. We had a lot of work to do. We started the conversation off today talking about a lot of work that we're still trying to do here in 2024. But the opportunities to take yourself and pull yourself up by the bootstraps, or even if you don't have any bootstraps or boots at all, you know, to pull yourself up and use your work ethics and your ingenuity to achieve the highest level of success, that opportunity still exists right here in America. And I felt like the self-made brand is really a symbol of the hard work and dedication and commitment that one person can make to themselves to bring themselves to the highest level of success, regardless of how their circumstances may have started.
Absolutely, absolutely. I couldn't agree with that, with your answer more. I just thoroughly enjoyed researching you. Oh, that doesn't sound creepy, but I was just like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. More people need to know about him. I mean, you could have like a whole history channel on just you.
I feel like that myself sometimes when I think about all the stuff I'm involved in.
That is amazing. 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 So I know you're involved in media as well. And I'm curious, what has been one of your most favorite recent media projects that you've worked on?
Wow. And it's interesting that you say that because I actually have several that I'm really passionate about. Mm-hmm. We have a project, a documentary called Tiger Run, The Untold Story, that I actually shot in 2022 with Coach Prime, Deion Sanders, in the Jackson State University football program. And so if you recall, in 2021, there was not a single athlete from an HBCU drafted to the NFL. And so Coach Prime was really dedicated and determined to change that outcome in the 2022 draft. And so we partnered with his winning foundation, and we began to put together this documentary that chronicled and really gave a high-level overview of his time at Jackson State, the impact that he had on the university, the city of Jackson, as well as HBCUs as a whole. But more importantly, the impact that he had on the students, athletes that came to play under his leadership. And so we had six individual students that we chronicled in this documentary who came from different walks of life. Some of those walks of life were much more tougher than others. You know, there was one student athlete in that documentary that witnessed his best friend get murdered in front of him. You know, as a kid, you had one that's, you know, lived in a house with his grandmother, mother, you know, just piled on top of each other. And getting to the NFL or getting to professional football was going to really be a game changer for them. Fortunately for us, James Houston IV was drafted in the sixth round by the Detroit Lions, who are now playing this upcoming weekend in the playoffs against San Francisco. But he was the first NFL, first HBCU player drafted to the NFL after Deion began his journey to try to make that happen. So that's one that I think is very inspirational, and that's going to really touch a lot of people. But we have another one that's going to be released this spring as well called Foundling. And it's the story of Judge Joseph Wood, who is the former Deputy Secretary of State in Arkansas, now serves as the Secretary of Transformation and Shared Services for the state of Arkansas, the first African-American judge elected in the state of Arkansas. But he was actually abandoned at birth as a child in the bitter winter in Chicago. He always knew he was adopted, but never knew he was abandoned at birth. And so he actually had been on this journey to try to find his birth parents, but he had to get his birth certificate, and the laws would not allow adoptees to obtain their birth certificates in Chicago. And so what he ended up doing, the laws changed. He ended up applying for his birth certificate once the laws changed. And when he got the birth certificate and opened it, it wasn't a birth certificate. It said foundling certificate. And he had never heard of the word foundling like most of us haven't. But a foundling is a child that's abandoned in a public place at birth. And so what he realized was that he really got his name from the government. They just gave him a name. That the date that he celebrated for 45 years as his birthday was actually the date that he was found in the streets of Chicago. And the only thing he had where the parents' name were supposed to be, he had the name of the person who actually found him. And so from that, finding that foundling certificate, he went on a journey to try to track down his birth parents and his biological siblings.
Oh my goodness, when is this coming out?
It's coming out in March of this year. I intentionally didn't give the ending.
I know, because I'm sitting here. I am such a documentary nerd. Like everyone knows I am. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'll add this to my list. When is this coming out? Because right, I do want to know the ending. Maybe you can tell me offline.
I will. Right. And then I'll just wrap it up. We got another that's very powerful as well. And it's about the 13th president of Clinton College in Rock Hill, South Carolina, is Dr. Lester McCorn. Dr. McCorn grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts. His family was a victim of urban revitalization, where the government bought up all the homes, did big infrastructure projects, and the people did not get enough money to replace their homes and ended up in the projects. A lot of them ended up never finding stable housing again. And his mother never found stable housing again after their community was destroyed. And so he spent most of his high school years homeless, going from shelters to living with friends to living in abandoned buildings with his mom and little sister with no utilities. But at the same time, he's going to school, going to church, doing all getting clothes from Goodwill, eating in soup kitchens. As he said, he never got enough to eat. But he used his just ingenuity to continue to put on a face that he was, you know, just a normal kid. When all the time he didn't know where he was going to sleep at night when he left school. And so his senior year in school, preacher took him in, asked him, had he ever heard of Morehouse? It's called From No House to Morehouse. Asked him, had he ever heard of Morehouse College? He said, I've never heard of it. Short story is, they convinced him to apply. That's the only school he applied for, got accepted, and it changed his life.
Oh my goodness, I can't. Is that one coming out too?
Coming out in March of this year as well, From No House to Morehouse.
Okay, so I'm just going to have like my whole little weekend plan there.
And so we're going to launch these, and we're going to have select theaters around the country that we're going to do premieres in. And then we're also going to have it available on our streaming app. And they will also end up on Amazon Prime and Apple TV and Google TV and some of those other platforms as well.
Oh my goodness, I cannot wait. And I know the audience is not going to be, is not going to be in a position to wait either. So I cannot wait for this to come out. Oh my goodness.
They're great. I would say this, we've let some people screen when we were doing screenings and surveys, and people would just call us crying and boo-hooing when they watch.
I would have been one of those people. I'm like sitting over here like, can't get teary-eyed. You're actually doing the interview.
Right. They are some emotional stories. I have two kids that are in music. We have our own film production and music studios. And I have two kids that are into music with our company. And they produced all the soundtracks, wrote all the songs for these movies. And it's like, it really touches the heart, all of those.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the apple does not fall far from the tree there, right?
That's right. They're all very talented. Now we have to get the, you know, they came from a different, you know, era than I did, so they've gotten a little bit easier. So we just have to work on getting them as motivated, you know.
Yes.
To go the extra mile. Yeah. Don't just go the mile, we got to go the extra mile.
Yes. And actually, that's a perfect segue into my next question. How do you differentiate yourself from the competition?
I think that two ways. The primary way is that I'm going to work you. You know, I feel like the average person that gets up and they have a job, they go to work and they do everything that they're asked to do, they gave you 100%. And I think that should be what's expected of everyone. Like if you get paid to do something, you should do 100%. Everyone should do that. There should be no question about that. But my differentiator is that I'm going to give you 150. I'm going to give you 200%. I'm going to go above and beyond your expectations. And so while the person next to me is saying, well, you know, I just got to take, you know, go to X. I'm saying, no, we got to go all the way to Z, you know, because they may not have asked for that, but that's what we're going to do. And so we do that by not just the work we do, you know, within the company to bring a project to life, but also the way that we take our success and go back into the communities that help support our efforts and give back to those communities and give back to those individuals who are in need, and some of our most vulnerable citizens, some of our most vulnerable children who are trying to, you know, make a way for their own future, and being able to help and be a part of that is what we think really set us apart.
That's amazing. I do agree with you in that work ethic, but I do want to ask you a question. Do you think that's a little different because you own your own company? Because there are some of these corporations out there. I've been unfortunate to work for some of them. You know, a lot of us have been in those unfortunate situations where sometimes you're not necessarily rewarded for outworking, you know what I mean? Like trying to get to that level. So do you feel like some of the reason why you have that work ethic is because it's for you yourself? Like, you know, you're going to see something come back in return. Hopefully that makes sense what I'm saying.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I think there's probably a dual answer. I think to a large part, yes, it is because I work for myself. But then at the same time, I think there's just a side of me that want to do good by doing good. And that's what also helped me go the extra mile, because, you know, a lot of people achieve success and never help anyone because it's not really a mandate, right? It's not a requirement. And so I think a large part of why I want to do good is for me to be able to increase the amount of good I do for others, not just for self-enrichment. And so while I do go the extra mile for myself, I'm also viewing it as I'm going the extra mile for my children. I'm going the extra mile for my grandchildren. I'm going the extra mile for the community in which my business resides, extra mile for the institutions in which my business serves. And so I think that takes it to another level for me.
Love that. Love that. And I just had to piggyback off of that because I was just thinking to myself, some of these corporations, you can work yourself to death and it's like you don't see anything in return. So that's why I wanted to ask that question.
Right. That's important. And that's one of the reasons why I really pride myself as being a really, you know, high paying, fair paying organization. I believe that when people who work here and they look at the organization and they look at it as being a African-American owned company, and they look at the wages, the average wages that we're paying, I think that we are, you know, heads and shoulders above the competition. And I feel that we are just as competitive as if you was working for a majority owned company, if not more competitive. And I'm proud to say that I have, you know, vice presidents making six figures, all of them. And I'm proud of that.
That's awesome. That is absolutely amazing. And I'm sure it wasn't easy for you to achieve your goals, right? So how do you handle doubt and adversity when it comes across your path?
No, absolutely. So, you know, when it comes to doubt, where I have to deal with doubt mostly is not really from within myself, because I very rarely doubt myself if I feel like the plan is solid and the opportunity is solid. But where I have to deal with doubt is as an African-American business owner going out executing projects that are, you know, $10, $15, $20 million. There tend to be individuals that feel like, hey, you know, regardless of all these accolades, regardless of all the success this person has had, regardless of the track record, they'll try to find a way to dissect your past performance to try to exclude you from opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to train my people on is how we can deal with doubters by really highlighting our success and highlighting our processes and showing them how the areas that they try to, you know, bring forward as being doubtful areas, we can quickly extinguish that and show that that's not relevant within this organization. Adversity is, on the other hand, is one of those things that we're all going to face. And, you know, I tell people that success is like a pot of gumbo, you know, failures, adversity, you know, good times, bad times. it's just all go into the pot and you mix it up. And on the other side of it, if you stay the course, success is on the other side of it. So what happens oftentimes is when people want to start their own business or they want to make a significant change in their life, they will allow adversity to tell them, well, you know what, maybe God don't want me to do this because it's hard, or maybe it wasn't meant to be, or, you know, whatever excuses you can come up with to justify not doing something that's difficult. But the reality is that if it was easy, everybody would do it. And so the adversity is just that obstacle that's put in front of you for you to have to figure out how to overcome. And that's where the human ingenuity have to kick in. You know, we have situations daily that we have to figure out, okay, here's the situation. How do we overcome it? How do we keep moving forward? Because we don't want to have our plans and our goals and our dreams derailed. And so it's really a mindset of stick-to-itness is what I call it. Developing that mindset that, hey, this is what I've chosen to do. And I believe in what I'm choosing to do. And I'm going to stick to it. And I'm going to make it successful.
Yeah, I cannot agree with you more on that. That is so key. Just being able to have that stick-to-itness, because a lot of people at the first sight of adversity, they just either freeze or they just kind of give up. Like, then they miss out on that dream that God could have had in store for them. Right. Yeah, that's something that's always been a fear of mine. I don't want to be that person.
Exactly. And me either.
So, I don't ever want to be that person.
and when I see a situation that presents a number of challenges, I love it. Because I understand that it's just going to limit my competition. Some people are going to see that as a reason not to do it. And I see it as a reason to do it. So it's one of those things they say, it's the cup half full or half empty. It's just really how you perceive it.
Yeah, I never thought about that. You're right. If you have a bunch of obstacles in your way, many people aren't going to attempt to go for it. So the chances of you doing it, I never thought about it like that. I just got that. I never thought about it like that. I've always viewed it a different way. But that's amazing. Yeah. So you're big on giving back to the community, and I'm kind of curious, what motivates your generosity and what is your favorite way to give back?
Wow. I think that what motivates my generosity is just really the burning desire that I have within to be a change agent. So when it comes to giving back to a community or giving back to institutions and to people, at the end of the day, I want to be able to say that I've impacted lives, not just been successful and made money and you know, been able to enjoy my own life, but I've been able to see where I've opened a door and blazed a path for someone to come behind me. And so we really drill down and look at, you know, the key areas that, you know, our people of color, where they struggle. Number one is access to education. So that's a deep passion of ours. And so on the foundation side and on the P3 side, you know, we implemented programs, whether it's at the 10 grand for your band, it's where we donate $10,000 to HBCU bands to form a P3 in the field at halftime, or whether it's our Attack on Hunger program, where we adopt food pantries at institutions and communities to help make sure that students and people have access to wholesome and healthy food options. Our affordable housing program, where we acquire and develop affordable housing and student housing programs to ensure that people have access to quality housing. And here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize. About one third of students in college are both housing insecure and food insecure. And a lot of people don't realize that. So when you go to an HBCU or minority serving institution where 85-90% of the people are in school on Pell Grants or other assistance, that number is even higher. And so when you develop a student housing project for a minority serving institution or HBCU, then you have given a kid a shot at life, because a lot of those kids do not have housing. They may be living in a house with 12 people in two bedroom. I grew up in a house with two bedrooms, seven people. So you have to look at, you know, that's not really a comfortable way to live, number one. But number two, it's not really an environment conducive towards education, because people are on top of each other. So how do you study? How do you find that quiet space to do your homework? And so your grades suffer, your achievements suffer. And so what we found is that by offering these type of opportunities, whether it's through providing gap funding to help kids stay in college, where they have no other mechanism to filling gaps, We've had kids that are transferred from other colleges and had balances at other colleges. And the only way that they could stay enrolled at the new school is to get the transcript transferred. And the only way they can do that is to pay the bill at the old college. But there's no financial aid that would pay a bill at a previous institution. And so we can come in and provide funding to allow that kid to stay enrolled in school, give them a shot at life. So it's those type of motivations that really get me going and keep me really high on philanthropy and giving and helping people.
Oh my goodness. You're so incredibly knowledgeable about so many different industries, so many different topics. Where do you self-educate?
It's interesting that you asked me that question. So what I do, to be honest with you, and it's pretty simple. I tell my kids all the time, say, y'all ask me questions. You'll come all the way, drive all the way to my house, or call, pick up the phone and call me and ask me a question. A lot of times the answer on your phone, right?
So what I say, Google, right?
YouTube is a good tool as well. Reading newspapers, reading articles, just really studying and researching. I would say when I got into documentary filmmaking, I started off in the podcasting. I'm affiliated with Forbes on their business council for the fifth year, and we launched a podcast together, and it went very, very well. That kind of put me into PBS, where I became the executive producer of two TV shows. And then I decided that I could have a big impact by getting into documentary filmmaking. And I started off by really trying to outsource everything, the vision, the editing, the whole nine. And we spent about a year and a half, of just kind of spinning our wheels because we couldn't really find the right editors and people to do the job for. So I just decided that, I'm going to have to figure this out on my own. So I went to YouTube, and every morning I get up about 3:30, and I start to watch videos on how to make documentary films, how to do this, and learn, how to put together the stories, bought the software that allowed us to easily put together stories and really advance the technology that we were using. And then I took the bulls by the horn and said, I'm going to have to, I say I'm the executive producer. I say I'm the producer. I'm going to have to produce. And I began to put the stories together myself. And we've won to date over 50 awards at film festivals. We've been invited to, as far as, to Scotland, to India, as part of to screen our documentaries. But we entered them into the festivals early because we felt like that would really give us a gauge on how they would be perceived. And we won just numerous awards. I've won best director, best producer. I've won, best documentary, best, all of these different accolades. And it's astonishing because this didn't happen until I took it upon myself to say, I'm the CEO of the company, and it's not beneath me to do the grit work, the grit and grind work to make sure that we take this company to where I want to take it. And if I don't know how to do it myself, I figured out it's not going to get done. So I had to figure out how to do it. So I literally, in the evening times, will get in and start editing and putting together movies. I'll be in Detroit on Thursday morning to shoot an interview for a documentary. I fly to Chicago that night. I'll be shooting an interview in Chicago on Friday morning. I'm shooting an interview for the same documentary in Dayton, Ohio tomorrow morning. And these are all different film crews. We created specs for the film crews so that we can make sure that whatever film crew we hire, they know what specifications we're looking for. We get the same deliverables, how we want them delivered to us. And then I will literally put the story together myself and then send it out to my editors and say, okay, I've already put the whole story together. Now all you have to do is meet these specs to make sure that the final output are to the specifications that the platforms and the theaters want these documentaries to be in. But I've made their life easy because they don't have to figure anything out.
I'm just taking this all in because I'm a one-woman podcast host. So I literally taught myself how to edit, how to get the lighting, all that stuff. So listening to you tell this story is so inspirational to me because I love documentaries. And to be quite honest, I've never told too many people this, but I would love to create different documentaries because I love listening to people's stories and, asking the questions that they might not necessarily get from traditional mainstream like media, because they tend to ask the same you know, kind of cookie cutter questions, if you will. And it's just so inspirational. So YouTube, Google, and just some work ethic.
It's a work ethic. You
know, that's what I got from your answer.
Right. And I have, you know, I do have, fortunately, I do have a little team around me that can help with other aspects of it. But,
sure.
But we did not have the capabilities in-house to really, you know, put together a fluent story, do the editing, et cetera. So now we know that in-house we can do that. And then we have outsourced editors that come back and just take our work product and then produce it to the specification that we require.
That's amazing. I am so inspired by that. Me personally, I am inspired by that answer. So,
oh, okay. I mean, we spent tens of thousands of dollars on film crews, you know, that were no good. And now
I believe it. I believe it.
And as I learned during The Secret, I can call 7 or 8 different film crews, send them all out, spend a fraction of the money, get the same content, and we can produce documentaries in a fraction of the time.
Isn't that amazing? I you know, there's that saying, if you want something done, do it yourself, right? Right. I really am a firm believer in that. And it's kind of funny, when I first started my journey into podcasting, not saying that I've arrived, but when I first started my journey, I felt like I wanted to just outsource as much as I could. But then I realized what you said. I'm like, wait a minute, like, this isn't done the way that I thought that you were going to do it. I just did it myself. And I didn't.
Right.
I didn't realize how freeing that can be. Yes, you know, it's a little time consuming up front, but once you've got that knowledge, no one can take it away from you. And then when you decide to outsource, you're talking to the person intelligently, right?
That's right. They know you know.
Exactly. They can't give you the runaround.
That's right. And look, I have this little period of time. I'm up early in the morning. Sometimes I work. So nobody's calling me, nobody's pulling on me. And I use that time to work on documentaries. I mean, traveling on airplanes and things of that nature. A large part of founding I did in hotels and airports. So.
Really? Oh my goodness. Yeah. 5 to 8 a.m. is like my time.
You got to have that time. You got to have a time where you can get you a little pet project or get you some peace and really, you know, either meditate or do your work in peace.
Oh my goodness. So I know that you have been a part of so many different industries and have so many different occupations, but I've got to ask you, what occupation other than the ones you're already in, would you be willing to try if you had a chance?
I would say maybe... Interesting. So I'm currently not in the kind of software manufacturing business or software development business. And I do have a desire to one day, you know, have a division that can develop, you know, apps, develop, you know, other tech, you know, technical software that can make or improve productivity. So I think software development would probably be an area of interest for me.
Oh, I guarantee you're going to conquer that.
Out of time.
Another 5 years, you're going to be like, well, you're going to be hitting all the lights, Silicon Valley circuits. So anyway.
I kind of, you know, and I don't think I mentioned this, but, you know, I developed a animated cartoon, which I did. I actually outsourced the development. We did the storylines, we did the whole development, and it's actually based on my 3 grandchildren. And so I haven't released it yet. I have 1 episode totally produced, and they're little, you know, little 8-minute, 9-minute shows. And I'm going to do a whole little series of those and release them probably in the fall.
That's awesome. I think that's so cute. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Oh my goodness. So you, again, I've already mentioned this, you use your full 24 hours to the fullest.
And
the only way that you're probably able to do this is because you've got a variety of different like productivity hacks. And I'd love to know, what is your favorite one, and share them with us, because I know we could all benefit from that.
Well, I would say this, one of the ones that I use that's really kind of new and transformative is really ChatGPT. I don't use ChatGPT to write, but what I use it to do is you're in a hurry, right? And you're writing, you're trying to get your thoughts out. It's a good tool that you can take your thoughts and put it in there, and they'll kind of catch errors, help you word things better. So it's really you, and you really kind of have, it's almost like having an assistant writer who's helping you, but you still are able to create content that's really authentically yours. There's a lot you can do with that platform, but that's kind of one of my favorite things to do. And I think I always try to figure out ways in which I can just make things easier. And so one of the things that I found is that by having all of my, my app, my phone, iPad, MacBook, all of those being the same platform and integrated together, that's significant on productivity, because there are certain things that are going to be easier to do on the actual MacBook platform than trying to use a cell phone or an iPad. But you kind of have them integrated, then you're not trying to figure out, okay, how do I get this information from one device to the next? You can easily access it among multiple devices, and it allow you to, just be much more efficient. And so what I did also was I got my entire company on the same platform as well, so that if we're in a situation where they say, we need a video. Well, if you need a video and you send it by text message, it loses quality 99% of the time. So if you wanted to have the same, clear, clean quality as the original, then you can airdrop it, right? And if you got the same platform, then you can airdrop things to each other. So those sorts of things that you can kind of think about to say, okay, that'll make my life, a lot simpler and make my productivity higher. So I'm not spending a lot of time trying to recreate things or upload things and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, huge chat GPT person as well. So yeah, especially when it comes to writing like the descriptions for the podcasting and things of that nature, like it makes it so much easier. It's just
it's absolutely a great tool.
Yeah, definitely. So we are in the brand new year. We're in 2024. And I ask every one of my guests this question. If you had to choose one word to represent your goals for this year, what would it be and why?
Transformative.
Ooh, okay.
And I say that because I believe that through some of the things that we're embarking upon in 2024, it's going to not only transform our companies, it's going to transform, myself as a producer and, media personality. And I think it's going to transform the people that are able to view and be impacted by, what we're producing. And that, even on the music side, on the documentary side, some of the things that we're going to be doing on the real estate side this year are going to really, I think, transform my company, myself, and individuals that are going to benefit from those.
Amazing. Amazing. I know I've benefited from this interview. Oh, my goodness. I have learned so much. Last but not least, what's the best piece of advice that you have for aspiring entrepreneurs?
Never give up. Be consistent, be committed, be dedicated. Being an entrepreneur is just like being in a relationship. If you're in a relationship and you're not committed and you're not dedicated to it, you're not going to be successful in that relationship. And so what I tell my kids and what I tell people all the time, pick something that you love. And if you love it, you'll do it all the time. Everything that we love, nobody has to convince us to do it. If you love the apple pie from McDonald's, nobody has to convince you to go buy McDonald's and get that apple pie, right? So if you pick something that you love and something that you're passionate about, you would be chomping at the bits to get to your computer, to get to your office, to get to whatever device is necessary for you to do more of that. Yeah. And so just have that burning passion, have that stick-to-itness, that commitment, that dedication. And if you're doing something that you love, it's going to work itself out. And I think that's really the key or the keys that I've used in my own life.
Wow. Dee, it has been an honor and a complete pleasure to have you on the show. I really appreciate it. And if folks want to get in touch with you, how can they go about doing so?
Sure. So my website is dbrown, dbrownceo.com. So dbrownceo.com. And our real estate development company is thep3groupinc.com. That's thep3groupinc.com.
Again, thank you much. Thank you so much for coming on to the show. And all of this information is going to be on the Hustle and Faith website, as well as the show notes and YouTube channel. Once again, Dee, thank you so much for
coming
on
the show. Thank you for having me. The pleasure was all mine. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed listening to Hustle and Faith and would like to support the show, please consider sharing it with your friends, rate or leave a review, donate, or make a purchase at our shop starring You Crew. Remember, if you're everything to everyone, then risk being no one. You never know who you will inspire. See you in the next episode. Are you enjoying the Hustle and Faith podcast? Regardless of where you listen to Hustle and Faith, if you love this show, please leave us a review at ratethispodcast.com/hustle and faith. Again, that's ratethispodcast.com/hustle and faith. Or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, if you feel so inclined to do so, why don't you just go ahead and leave us a 5-star review? Doing so will help others to discover this show. Thanks again for your support. It is very much appreciated.